Note, the following information is not for air. We're conducting an experiment that may affect you whether you're narrowcasting this audio service on Simplex or on a network that requires frequent pauses to reset shorter timers. Which of the following would you find most useful? 1. The customary 10-second ID break at the halfway point, or 2. Both the 10-second ID break at the halfway point and a shorter pause every 3 minutes or less for network timer reset. We'll check the stats after 2 weeks. You'll hear both in this Rain Hamcast. Runtime is 19 minutes 7 seconds with a 10-second ID break after 8 minutes 47 seconds. Rain Hamcast number 62 will begin in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. This is Rain Hamcast podcast number 62. Voiced by Will Rogers, K5WLR. Tasmania is an island state of Australia about the size of West Virginia, located some 150 miles south of the mainland. This island is home to 500,000-plus residents. One such resident grew up in South Central Australia, 15 miles from Adelaide, became a software engineer as a teenager. At age 47, moved his family of 11 from the Australia mainland to Tasmania in 2018, has spent the last 25 years working for Freedom Scientific, the U.S.-based developer of JAWS, a popular speech screen reader program for the blind Windows PC user, and most recently has succeeded in modifying firmware to enable the blind ham complete access to some Chinese VHF and UHF radios, not available from traditional offshore manufacturers, i.e. ICOM, Kenwood, Yaesu, and others. He's Joseph Stephen, VK7JS, a most articulate software engineer down under who happens to be blind. Rains Hapali, KC9RP, spoke with this affable software engineer via Zoom back in January. At that time, Joe's internet service provider was Sky Muster, a high-orbiting satellite internet provider that was prone to occasional latency. Here's the first of two excerpts from Hap and Joe's Zoom conversation.
Did you grow up in Tasmania?
No, actually, I grew up in Adelaide, which is the capital of South Australia. So if you can imagine Australia, the mainland, that's the south-central state of Australia. We only moved to Tasmania about 4 years ago. I'm new to farming and new to the rural setting, although where we used to live in Adelaide was not in the city. It was about 25 minutes out of the city and in the hills, whereas this is sort of forest. We're surrounded by about 5,000 acres of forest.
What took you to Tasmania?
We wanted some land for the children to grow up on and to have a bit of space to run around. And we've got 9 children. Some of them have already left home. So we've got 4 living at home still. And we swapped a third of an acre, 25 minutes out of Adelaide, for 205 acres, 40 minutes north of Launceston, for exactly the same price.
How did you get into what you're doing now?
I've been a software engineer. I'm totally blind, and I learned to program when I was 11. And I started out programming on the Commodore VIC-20, which had about 3 kilobytes of RAM. And then I learned machine code, and then I progressed to the Commodore 64 and then to the PC. I've been a programmer for most of my life. I'm now 50. I've been working for Freedom Scientific for at least 25 years. So my main day job is doing JAWS for Windows, and I program in C++. I obviously, being interested in amateur radio, am interested in making an accessible radio. What happened was a guy in Melbourne, Roger Clark, reverse engineered the firmware on these Chinese radios, and he open sourced it. He put it out on the internet. He began adding voice prompts and making the radio accessible. And I got hold of that source code and I've been working with it for the last couple of years to improve it dramatically in terms of accessibility. I really wanted to not diverge from his code. I really wanted to just keep the whole project unified, but he has proven over time not to be interested in doing that. He's got his own desire to do what he wants to do, and he basically said, well, you go do what you want to do. And so that's what we've done, which is sad because it would have been nice to keep the project unified.
It's one thing if you grew up in California or New York or England, but in Australia, of all places, how is it that you were able to get the help you needed at the time that you were growing up?
When I began to program, there was no such thing as a talking computer. So I had to write my programs down in Braille and type them in and hope for the best. If it didn't work, you had to literally start from scratch. There was no editor. So it taught you to be very careful about what you did. And it sort of set good habits about design and thinking through problems. Of course, these days with screen readers and software tools and debugging tools, things are so much easier. When I was growing up, you had very limited memory. You had no screen reader. And you had no editor. So it was really tough. I began programming. I was very interested in programming from a very early age. And I was also interested in radio. I started out on the 27 megahertz CB band. And then I got a scanner. And I was always fascinated by the fact that you could transmit audio across the airwaves without wires. It was fascinating. I thought of a quote from Marconi. He said, prayer to God was like radio sending signals across thin air. And I certainly agreed with Samuel Morse when he said, what has God wrought? It was amazing to be able to transmit across the airwaves. So I stayed on the 27 megahertz band for a while, and then I progressed to the UHF CB band. And then it wasn't until 2015 when I decided I'm going to get my amateur radio license. I remember listening on shortwave back when I was probably in my teens, and I heard these guys talking, and I asked my stepdad what these people were talking about, and he goes, oh, I don't know, but it sounds like it's amateur radio. I never really knew much about amateur radio until many, many years later. So 2015, I studied for my foundation license. We have three levels of license in Australia. 2016, I studied my standard license, and then 2017, I did my advanced license, and that course is a 6-month course, and I studied it in 3 weeks and did all the assignments and everything in 3 weeks because I was working full time and I just wanted to get it out the way. So I did that. I got 97% or something like that for the exam. All that shows on the certificate is competent or incompetent. They don't have grading system anymore. And I thought, there's no incentive for studying anymore. That being said, I was interested in it. It was fascinating stuff. And of course, the next progression was to merge the two, radio and programming. So when this guy reverse engineered the firmware of these radios, and I discovered that I could just fix bugs and I could add features to my heart's content, it was just wonderful.
Accessible GD77.
How did you decide what radios?
Oh, well, that decision was kind of made for us because the reverse engineering was for a particular chipset. So the Radiodity GD77, GD77S, Baofeng DM1801 and RD5R all use the same chipset, which is based on a particular CPU and a particular DMR decoding chip. So once that code base was developed by this other guy, I sort of just inherited it, took it and ran with it.
You're in the middle of a conversation Rains Hapali, KC9RP, had with Joe Stephen, VK7JS, an Australian software engineer who happens to be blind. Joe has been making waves with his firmware modification that is enabling blind hams worldwide access to previously inaccessible handhelds. We'll resume their discussion in a moment. This is Rain Hamcast Podcast number 62 for March 5th, 2022. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR. We'll be right back.
You're tuned to the Rain Hamcast from Chicago, available both on therainreport.com and the Rain Report page on YouTube.
I don't have a lot of time to do the initial hard, heavy legwork of reverse engineering, but I can certainly take what he's done and make it more accessible and add features that are specific not only to blind people, but to people with dexterity issues. There's a guy who's totally blind in a wheelchair, and he's got many issues with dexterity and things like that, and I've been able to add features that's made it easier for him to use. I just want to help people out.
How much of the work that you do is motivated by blind folks who contact you and say, I really like this feature. I wish we could have it on our blah, blah, blah radio. How much of it is that as opposed to your own curiosity to see if you can do it?
Well, being totally blind myself, I think quite often I have the same desires as many blind people. And so, yes, definitely people write to me and ask me for features. And I think I've implemented every single feature that anyone's ever asked for. And I would have the same sort of features requests myself. I'm very grateful to Roger and those who initially added voice prompts. But there's a very big difference between a sighted person using a radio in the way that they think a blind person should use it. And we quickly discovered that we were able to make the radio far more, not just accessible, but usable, optimal for a blind person. For instance, sometimes sighted people add voice prompts, but they either don't add enough or they add too much. So it's either too verbose or it's not verbose enough, or it gives the wrong information, or it doesn't give the right information at the right time. But as a blind person, I know what we need. We want what we want when we want it. And so now the radio's got three levels of verbosity. You can choose. Do you want it really verbose? Do you want it halfway? Do you want it minimal? I've made it so that if the radio doesn't have or speak things properly, you can add your own voice prompt. So if you want the radio to say your particular repeater name correctly, you can add your own voice prompts using your own voice and then associate those prompts with words or phrases in the radio's UI. So it's much more flexible than what was ever envisaged. And this group of radios is now the most accessible group of radios in the entire world because absolutely everything is accessible on it.
VHX Welch 4-5 presents 220 MHz Welch 4-5 presents UHX Welch 4-5 presents TOT off.
Where is that voicing coming from?
Obviously, the radio doesn't have enough memory to have a full-blown speech synthesizer on it. He realized that the DMR encoder compresses speech into a very small space. Roger was very clever. What he did was he used the DMR encoder of the radio itself to encode text strings that we could display on the screen. And so basically, he used the DMR encoder to encode all the strings on the radio. Then what you do, encoded strings as if they were a DMR signal. I took that further and then said, okay, well, if we can take a text string from an MP3 file that's been generated by the internet or synthesizer on your PC and convert it to DMR, well, we can do that with our own voice. Press the PTT button, you speak into the radio, it already encodes your voice. Let's grab that encoded text and associate it with the text that you want to speak in the radio. There are lots and lots of different voices you can have on these radios, and they all basically come from an online synthesizer on the internet. We grab the word list, we upload each word, we grab the MP3, we then encode it into the DMR format, concatenate it all together, and then upload that sequence of voice prompts to the radio, and of course index it so that when you want to speak something from the radio source code, it knows how to grab that piece of data and decode it and play it.
You talk about DMR. I, as a blind ham that's not familiar at all with any of the digital formats that are used today in VHF, UHF, amateur radio. The DMR you're talking about is not the same DMR that is utilized by various repeaters to transmit in a digital format.
Yes, exactly the same format. I used to be a D-Star person. I used to really dislike DMR because I started out on D-Star, and they both have their advantages and disadvantages. But the DMR digital format, you're familiar with the way audio is recorded, and wave files, for instance, take up a lot of space. Well, DMR, when it's encoded, takes up very, very little space. A second of audio saved in a wave format is kilobytes, whereas in DMR, 1 second of audio is probably less than a kilobyte. So it's probably 30 or 40 times compressed. And so that's why it's good for transmitting storage and transmission across the air, because you've compressed the audio. And of course, the quality does suffer. I obviously prefer the sound of analog audio much better. All-Star sounds much better than DMR, D-Star, or any digital format. But good DMR, sometimes you get a good signal, and sometimes people's voices are more suited to the DMR encoding. And when that happens, it's very nice audio. But I've also heard some terribly mismatched voice to encoding where people's voices sound awful. It's more more often than not, it sounds bad than it does sound good, I must admit.
Okay, so we're on channel one, which is called MicroHub. I'm just going to slow down the speech. Okay, I'm going to go down one.
40.
Road channel.
29.
Family channel.
18.
Caravanning channel.
3.
Repeater.
2.
Repeater. International Space Station.
You've heard a few of the channels there. One was International Space Station. One was...
2. Repeater.
2. Repeater.
3.
Repeater.
3. Repeater.
18.
Caravanning channel.
18. Caravanning channel.
29.
Family channel.
Family channel.
40.
Road channel.
Road channel.
MicroHub.
MicroHub. Etc.
I wear two hearing devices, but I like good audio. I'm afraid, based on what others have said about DMR, that I'm not going to be very happy with it because it is digitized audio.
The thing is that these radios do analog and digital. The only reason I'm talking about DMR is that's the mechanism by which we were able to make the voice prompts, add all the spoken prompts for all of the menus and frequency readout and the mode readout, etc. But you could just as well not use DMR at all, and you can just use All-Star or FM. All-Star is wonderful because the audio is as good as FM across the internet, and that's my preferred format rather than DMR or D-Star, but D-Star and DMR, the main advantage is you have no background noise.
Which do you prefer audio-wise between All-Star and Echolink?
I haven't tried the latest Echolink. The encoder for All-Star is much better quality than the original Echo, but I don't know whether the encoder's even changed. It may have, it may not. I don't know. I can't speak to it. But when repeaters are linked together with All-Star, you don't know that the person on the other end is not coming in via the air. They're coming over the internet. You've got no idea. The audio is perfect.
I've been critical of the lack of voice quality that there used to be on Echolink, but I'm rather pleased what I hear now with their upgraded software.
Well, they've probably changed the encoder to be the same as All-Star. I wouldn't be surprised if they had.
I will need to buy the radio as is and then get some help to finish downloading this stuff.
If you're a proficient computer user, you'll be fine by yourself. You shouldn't need sighted help, but, you know, you might, but you shouldn't need it. As long as you can follow instructions, you should be fine.
Will I be able to find the manual?
I've actually created an accessible user guide. So inside the archive, there's a docs folder, and inside the docs folder, there's an accessible guide for each of the radios that we support. You can just read that in a text editor. It's got all the information about all the functions, how to use them.
And that concludes our first excerpt from a Zoom conversation between Rains Hapali, KC9RP, and Australian software engineer Joe Stephen, VK7JS, who happens to be blind. His firmware modifications are opening up accessibility to modern-day ham radio handhelds to the blind worldwide. More from Hap's conversation with this remarkable ham next time. RAIN founder Hapali, KC9RP, edits and produces this bi-weekly ham radio hamcast without monetization. Your support and feedback are welcome on therainreport.com. RAIN hamcast number 63 will post March 19th, 2022. Copyright 1985, 2022, RAIN, the Radio Amateur Information Network. All rights reserved. RAIN programming is made available under a Creative Commons license. You are encouraged to download, share, host, and transmit the RAIN Hamcast in its entirety via amateur radio. YouTube assistance from Tom Shimizu, N9JDI. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, bidding you very 73 from RAIN, the Radio Amateur Information Network. Keep on hamming.